Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, Jackie Cation here. You're listening to The Dork Forest. You know the websites, dorkforest.com, thedorkforest.com, if you like a determiner. JackieCation.com has everything. Both of my podcasts, all of the stand-up stuff, the new album, links to YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, all the things. But so, I think, does dorkforest.com, where you can look at old videos of different shows. Anyway, if you want to support the show, tell people about the show, review it on iTunes, thumbs it up on Pandora or Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts, I appreciate that. You can donate. You can donate monthly. PayPal lets you do that. You can also do my Venmo if you like. It's at Jackie Cation absolutely everywhere. And my email address is jackie@jackiecation.com. And that's what the PayPal is. The PayPal link is on jackiecation.com and dorkforest.com. And go to any of them. Thanks for listening. There's merch. There's stand-up. There's tour guide. You know, you can find out where I'm touring. This is getting long. So let's get into the show. Jackie Cation, I'm in my garage. It's still warm, Los Angeles, but now I'm with the other half of the Blackout Diaries podcast, Mr. CJ Sullivan. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Jackie. Great to see you, as always.
As always. And here's a scoop on CJ Sullivan. It's CJ Sullivan, C as in C, J as in J, Sullivan as in Sullivan, comedy.com. At CJ Sullivan was taken on Instagram. He has a new album called What Am I Complaining About? And you can get that wherever you get albums. Feel free to knock yourselves out and do that. Your dorkdom, CJ Sullivan. Are you a Chicago comic?
I am originally a Chicago comic. Yes, I'm not originally from Chicago, but I moved there very young and came up there with all those people.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All you were wearing the perfect sunglasses for your dorkdom, by the way.
I'm doing a costume for that. I believe in the uniform for sure.
Well played, because this is the Dork Forest safe space. Mm-hmm. Let us. You enjoy gambling, the history, the experience, the future, all of it. What? So.
I love it. I will say real quick, I had a little anxiety coming on the show just because I had to think of something that I enjoyed, you know, and I get it to Dork Fest. And I'm like, wow, I really don't, you know, I mean, I tolerate things, you know, right. But then once you get into it, I'm like, yeah, I guess I do. When you start knowing all these things about it, you know, like, I guess I should admit that.
I did an episode with a guy who at the end of it, like a half an hour after we sort of hung up, he goes, oh my God, I love to bake. What just happened? And I'm like, too late, brother. Well, I'll do it next year. And
That's great. So it's a self-discovery show as well.
Yeah. And everybody loves something, you know, even if it's, I mean, if it's a nightmare, I don't want to talk to you about it for an hour, quite honestly. but if it's something just weird and you're like, my favorite story, Kathy Ladman didn't want to be on the show. She's like, the only thing I like that much is knitting, and knitting isn't dorky.
What?
And I was like, I don't mean to burst your bubble over here. That's pretty dorky. And everything's dorky. Like I've done.
Everything is dorky. If you're passionate about it, you can be dorky.
Yeah, yes. That's it. You dork out about it because it's something you love a great deal. And all cosplay is cosplay, right?
Right. Absolutely.
A $300 NFL Green Bay Packers sweatshirt or what? Jersey. You're a dork about the Green Bay Packers, my friend.
Yeah, absolutely. So, sports and comic books, all those things, they're the same exact thing. They just have better costumes. They're better at it, but you're still dressing up. I mean, you're wearing horns. Theirs goes just right to the head.
That's it. And my buddy who's got a Pixies t-shirt because he knows all the riffs just in case they need him to step in. That guy's a dork too. So we're all in this together, you guys.
Absolutely.
Just own it. All right. So you got some. Now, I've heard my father is a bit of a dork. I want to get to the last guy, Jimmy the Greek, who I know his name, and I have seen him on sort of a ticker tape cable channel.
Yes, he's one of the most famous gamblers of all time, Jimmy the Greek. He got national fame. I mean, he was in.
Is he Greek?
You know what? We're going to find out a lot in this next hour, Jackie. There's a lot of the Greeks in here. Like, there's a very early nickname. And if you had that nickname, the Greek, you're probably going into the life of gambling somehow.
Right. If somebody's saying, hey, Jackie DiArmo, let's talk about, and you're like, well, I also sell rugs. Okay. So So was he Greek?
He was the Jimmy Greek from Steubenville, Ohio. He was friends with like Dean Martin and those guys out there. So that's why he got famous. Right. And they would talk to each other like that. And he was like the first handicapper. He was famous for the Super Bowl III, the biggest Joe Namath upset of all time. They said like it was a 19-point favorite when Joe Namath guaranteed a victory, but like he invented that point spread. It never really existed. It was just Jimmy the Greek. Yeah. So he kind of he brought gambling to the mainstream as far as sports gambling goes.
And is that sports gambling? Let's talk about sports gambling because there's handicaps.
Yep.
And there's a spread and there's odds. I understand the word odds.
You're doing great.
I'm doing great. So what does a spread really mean?
Okay. Well, the spread is two teams are going to play each other. And one might be very much better than the other one. So in order to make it even as far as gambling goes, the odds makers, the Jimmy the Greeks of the world, would put a spread on it, meaning my team is going to beat your team by at least 10 points. So they say minus 10.
Okay.
So I'll say if I like Jackie's team, they can lose, but just by less than 10 points, then you're still going to win the bet. So it kind of makes the betting part of it even though the contest itself is not going to be even.
It's a learning curve. It's a bell curve, essentially.
Absolutely. It's a little advantage.
There we go. And then is that the same kind of as a handicap? Do you know what a handicap is?
Well, a handicap is kind of like the art of.
That's actually, when you play, right?
Right. It's kind of like breaking down the analysis of it. Like you handicap it. You're trying to like figure out the spread and figure out what side you're going to take.
Okay. And now that I just thought of that, I'm like, I wonder if the handicapped hate that it's called the handicap. Anyway,
golf there's a handicap, which is also very similar, where you have different numbers and one's a handicap. The lower handicap is the better number. So like a two is better than a 10. So if you're playing a two versus a 10, that means you have an eight difference in handicap. You'll get eight strokes to make it even.
Okay. So like they'll start at eight and you'll start at zero. And
basically yes.
And then you're like, well, I got a 78, and then they're like, well, I also got a 78, but they also really got a 70.
Right.
Okay.
So the one, if you both got 78, the one who's getting eight shots would have won there.
Right.
The one who has a 10.
Right. Okay. Which is a 10. That's where it loses me is when they say the number, well, then you have a 10.
Right.
Or you have a negative 10. You're like, well, why wouldn't we still be using the number eight? That's the weird thing. What's the 10 mean? Do you have any idea, or am I just muddying the waters?
We're talking about a lot of hypotheticals right now. I just came up with 10, meaning that I said eight was the difference between 10 and two. I was just saying that if someone had a 10, someone had a two.
Okay. If their handicap was a 10 and the other person's handicap was a two, that's an eight.
Yeah.
An 8-point difference in between those two humans that are playing the game.
Yep.
Thank you very much. I have learned a thing. So, okay. Any good Jimmy the Greek stories?
Well, Jimmy the Greek is
Joe Namath thing.
He's famous for a lot of things. He was in Cannonball Run 2, for crying out loud. Speaking friends with those guys. Bringing a game full, but unfortunately, he had a tragic ending. A lot of gamblers did.
Shocking.
Right.
Yes.
He was fired from CBS, famously, if you Google it. He said a racist comment at a function for a Martin Luther King dinner, I think. And it's a weird video where he's trying to say why the black athlete is better. And he was trying, it's like a lot of racist things, they try to act like it's intelligent, but it's just like, you know,
it just falls apart because you're just like, that's apart. Actually racist.
Yes.
How about that guy worked harder, did more sit-ups, and it turns out he is black.
Right. He's going to throw natural selection. But what's amazing is he's doing the quote and he can see the quote getting away from himself. as it's happening. There's video of it because he's very drunk when it happens.
And it's
getting away from him, and he's just like smiling. He's like, "You're not gonna air this." He's like, "Yeah, you." And he's like, "You really? Yep, you are gonna air this. All right. Well, I guess that's it for me being on TV." He kind of like signs off. Like, this is
what year
it,
was
you know?
That?
That was in the '80s, I believe.
Okay.
And, yeah, I remember Saturday Live actually doing a good skit about it afterwards. Phil Hartman played Jimmy the Greek.
Okay, that makes Kevin perfect.
Does,
that would have been kind of awesome.
And
yeah,
he would have had a good retirement because there's a casino in Vegas wanted to make an entire sports book called the Jimmy the Greek sports book and has him at, you know, his name, blah, blah, blah. And said, but he refused because he didn't want his name associated with gambling, which is very odd.
That is ironic.
For
that
the
is
most famous gambler.
Yeah, for a guy who probably bought houses,
right?
Based on
exactly
his odds calling and his was he a famous gambler himself? Or
of course, one time odds? I'll tell a quick fun Jimmy Greek story.
Sure,
if he was losing a lot at the racetrack, this is a fun famous story. But it's like he would bet on every single horse in one race, a ticket, like a $2 ticket on every single horse, just so he would have the winner, no matter if he lost money on it. So when the horse came in, he'd slap it down on the table like, "I got it, number 7 and get to the winner, even though he lost like $100 because he bet on all the horses in the race.
How many horses are in a race?
Well, it depends on the race, obviously.
But usually, is there an average?
Yeah, usually between 8 to 10 around now.
Okay.
But it can be smaller, can be bigger. Kentucky Derby has a lot because everyone wants to win it, so there's like 20.
Okay. So does it max out around 20?
Yeah, that's usually a pretty big race. Unless you're in Europe, funny. Sometimes they'll have super races. They call them with like 40, 60 horses, and like half of them don't even survive it. Like they just go out. They just go out into the woods.
They'll weed off.
Right. Just weed off, going to different people's properties on the highways.
And yet they are being ridden, one would imagine, by some sort of jockey person. But the jockey's like, this is going to happen. Let's go get a sandwich. And so that is hilarious. Okay, well, what about Billy Walters, who started at 9?
Started 9 years old. I kind of
that's not legal.
No, it's not legal. But that does remind me of me. I also, when I was in, I remember taking my friend's lunch bets like in the 7th, 8th grade or 6th grade. I would rip out the point spread of the Courier Post in South Jersey, and you rip out in like a little square of the point spreads and hand them out and take $5 bets. So that's it. That's what I kind of wrote.
That's insane,
yeah.
CJ Sullivan.
Yeah,
that's a story that I need to hear more about. Is your family a gambling family?
Yes, of course. We were from the East Coast, and it just kind of goes with the territory. One uncle's a cop, one uncle's a bookie, so they kind of
right. How was Thanksgiving there?
Powered off to each other. Depends on who covered. Depends on who didn't. You know, Thanksgiving was always up in the air.
Okay.
But but that's like a story where when I look back now, I'm like, yeah, I guess that is kind of odd. Like when I just saw your reaction there, I'm like, yeah, I guess sixth graders didn't usually take their friends' bets.
And you knew how to do it because of your uncle.
Yes, of course. And I would study, and like we'd watch. Like, but he worked at a newspaper stand up in Hartford, which
he was a caricature.
Yeah, of course. Okay. I didn't realize like, oh, these are fronts. These are actual things for movies that are real. And
right.
I'm like, man, this is a very popular newsstand. Like people will come in here a lot, slide a magazine over, and you know, not take anything back and then leave. Like, that guy just give you something? How does the store work? I'm like, this is the most profitable store in the city.
Is he still working or is he retired?
He is not a bookie anymore, but yeah, he does a little bit of business, but he's kind of retired. Yeah.
Right. Well, you gotta make sure that everybody's, cause my father is also, has always been peripherally working. He has he loves to gamble. He's not good at it.
Right.
Almost no one is.
No one is.
He's not terrible at it, but I did always want a bike. Let me just say that. And, but So when you were a child, you understood. So you're taking bets in sixth grade on the football games, on the horses.
Right. Not on the horse. No, you'd understand, but it makes you understand that it's the only way you do win is if you are the guy taking the bets and not making the bets.
Right. Cause you take a cut of each bet, right? You get 10% or.
Right. There's a term you want to add to your glossary, Jackie. This is, you can be called the VIG. Which is short for vigor.
Yep.
Or also known as the juice,
or a taste.
Your taste is absolutely so. If you wanted to, right, so if you wanted to bet $100 on your Vikings, then you would bet $110. 10% is the vig in order to win 100. And so I, if you lose, I want to keep 110. But if you win, you get the 100.
Okay.
So that, way, if you bet on the Vikings and then someone else bets on the Packers and they're playing each other, I'm going to make $10 either way.
You're going to make $20, won't you?
Well, one will win. So,
right.
If they're playing each other, you know what I mean?
Okay. So, if I'm betting on the football team and I want to bet $100, it's going to cost me $110.
Yes.
But I'm going to get my 100 back and another 100? The other person?
If you
100?
Win. If not I the win. Other person's mine. I'm on the book. Which I do want to say to the listeners, I'm not a bookie, by the way.
You are not a bookie. No, but this is all very hypothetical.
Left that back in sixth grade.
Exactly. And no, and it can all. Whatever, it's fine. Yeah, so the $100. So I'm back to the math again. We're gonna take a deep dive into what the math of that looks like because I don't see it.
Okay.
Here's the scoop. I play blackjack occasionally.
Yep.
And when I sit at that table, I say to myself, "Well, I'm gonna lose $100 and have a nice time." And then 2 hours later, I get up and I've
lost $100. Two hours, $100 a blackjack table is pretty good.
That's real nice. I like a $5, $10 blackjack table. I'm not going to change the world here.
I agree.
Yeah. So, but the betting on the, on a football game is interesting to me because of you're essentially both people are paying $110.
Yes.
One person will get $200 when it's over.
They'll get $210 back because they'll get the original $110 that they bet and then $100 profit.
Okay, that I see. So you know they won't have to pay the bit. They won't have to pay the taste,
right. They're paying 110 to win 100, so they'll get they'll get 210 back.
Their original bet
and the profit.
And if you lose, you lose 110.
You lose 110.
That's it.
So the casinos or the book's job is to have even balanced bets coming in. So you bet on the Vikings and someone else bets on the Packers. They're both paying 110. They're playing each other. No matter who wins, they're going to win $10.
They're going to get $10. And if they can get a million people to do that.
And apparently they have. Yeah.
Right. Turns out those things don't build themselves.
Right.
And which I feel obligated to tell the Rangers of the world that I don't care about football, but if I were to care about football, I would have to bet on the Packers because I'm from Wisconsin.
I'm
so,
sorry.
Yeah. So I'm Minneapolis comic. Much like yourself with the Chicago comedy.
A lot of Minneapolis comic.
That's it. And so Billy Walters,
started at nine. He also became just real quick about him. He's famous for being the most successful sports gambler of all time. And he was like, very huge. And he's been on 60 Minutes talking about it. He started what they called a syndicate where he gets a bunch of other heavy hitters, whales, if you will. And they join forces and then they spread their action around just because they're some of the few people that actually move lines. If you know what that means, where like I make a bet, the line's -3 on the Packers, meaning they're favored by 3 points.
Okay.
And then Billy Walters bets on the Packers, like $1 million, whatever he does, the line will come down and he'll move the spread itself. The Vegas will move the line because of his influence and how much they respect his betting.
Right.
So it'll come down like 2 or 1 or something. So
it'll change the bet and
it'll go up. Whatever.
Will the people who bet on that and including himself make sort of a lower percentage because he'll get
the number that he bets it at. And then everyone else will get a worse number. Because it'll be moved because of his bet right afterwards.
Okay. And so if you bet before him and they can't change it after, right?
That's the difference between horse racing and sports betting.
Horse racing can change in the moment.
Horse racing, you get the odds what it goes off at.
Okay.
Sports betting, you get it what you place the bet at. It can't change once you get the bet in.
Okay. The horse racing, what the odds are locked in when the race begins.
Right.
With football, is that baseball too?
Yes, all sports is what you lock it in. Horses is a prorated, as they say, it depends on the pool of the money involved in the gambling. So if like everyone's betting the one horse, the odds are going to be very low, you know. But if no one's betting the five horse, you put a little $10 on them, you're going to get really good odds on it. that has nothing to do with sports. So.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's it's the gambling that interests me. I mean, I famously, and when I was 19, I came home from college.
Yeah, let's hear
it. It was Christmas Eve. For some reason, my stepmother's working. My father is also ostensibly working, and he's always working. He's always trying to make a sale. He's always trying to sell some siding. He's always got some, you know, he's making a delivery for some bag man. Things are happening. He's constantly at work. But for some reason, Christmas Eve, I'm home. I'm alone. He comes into the house. And I'm like, hey, Dad, you want to go get coffee or something? He's like, I'm going to the track. Do you want to go to the track? And I said, is that going to be our father-daughter moment? And he goes, I'm going to the track. Did you want to come with me? They have coffee.
Label it all you want.
Yes. And I was like, okay. And so I'm 19 and I think we're going to go to a track. We did not go to a track. We went to the saddest building I've ever been in my life. And I do stand-up comedy. I've done the jukebox at Peoria. We went to an off-track betting facility in Waukegan, Illinois on Christmas Eve, where I literally saw what possibly might be 50 or 60 of the saddest 50-year-old men I've ever seen in my life. And we had coffee and we bet on horses and neither I lost $20 and I have no idea what he lost, but then we went home.
You make Jackie, you make me nostalgic when you say these things. I mean, my dad would always go to the track and he'd bring me as well. And
Not a horse in sight, by the way.
And OTBs don't exist. And OTBs don't exist anymore. I love those places, OTBs. There's like one or two almost like in the country remaining. And
I wonder if that one in Waukegan is still there.
I'm going to go ahead and say no, just because I know how the rest of the country is in the big cities. But those were some real characters too there, OTBs. Those were the real deal. I mean, hipsters pay $500 for to wear an outfit like these guys, like some guy named Catfish down there, you know, at an OTB. But my dad, one time, you know, he would always come back from the track and he'd never know if he won or lost. Won a few dollars, lost a few dollars, what he'd say. But one time, I'm never gonna know how mad my mom was. He brought home artwork from the track because they were going out of business, just like these OTVs. The track was going out of, and he bought artwork from the Garden State Raceway in New Jersey and thought that, you know, he was going to hang up some artwork from the racetrack and because he got a good, deal on it.
Yeah,
it's still in the garage, but it was
that is hilarious. I have while you told what is actually a hilarious story and I thoroughly enjoyed it, even though Lori Kilmartin would make fun of me for waiting off, I looked it up. So the Waukegan, Illinois trackside off-track betting, Green Oaks.
Yep.
Green Oaks, Illinois, permanently closed, ladies and gentlemen.
Does it got a year on that?
Libertyville, Illinois. When did that close? Let's find out.
I mean, I would definitely guess early 2000s.
Oh, yeah?
Did they have a nice spread on Christmas Eve? By the way, I'm kind of interested in that Christmas Eve you had there.
Exactly. What was the big looking like there? I have no idea. I have no idea. It's
what
always
was the juice.
What did it look like there? I'm kind of interested. It got a 4.5 on Yelp or Google when it was. I mean, look at literally the photos of this place. I mean, that guy.
Everyone has a handicap there, not to use problematic
language. That guy was there. Yes. That guy was hanging out there. That guy was my dad's friends at all times when I was a child.
That guy burned it down for insurance, I think.
Right. Well, thank God it was insured. Let's just say that was always a comment. And then it was always just, I don't know if they're playing Keno. I don't understand.
Yes, that was the thing. You know, the raffles was going on. 50,
right, there's
50,
some sort of
charity.
Bingo. Is there a chair? Is there a Catholic church right close? What was happening?
Is there a father-daughter Christmas Eve thing going? Bonding time. I mean, anything could be happening.
We did. Other bonding times with my father were usually he would come to see me do stand-up, and then he'd go, let's go get some coffee. I'll give you notes. 45 minutes of notes about how I was pitching the jokes too fast. Slow it down.
Slow it down. Language. That's what I would get a lot. And then that was basically it. You know.
It's interesting.
And he mispronounced a few names like that. Jerry Seinfeld. He seems to be.
Have you thought it? Did you call NBC? Have you asked them? I was like, no, I have not, Dad. Weirdly enough. So Brandon Lang, a tout.
Brandon Lang, this is more of a humorous one. He is a tout, which is these are people that they're con artists or scam artists, and they're liars, which I kind of enjoy. The movie with Al Pacino and Matthew McConaughey, two for the money. I don't know if you remember. It was a horrible movie.
Okay.
But it was based on this guy, and they would do things. They're still around, but they used to be around really prevalent in the 80s, where they'd have like hotlines to call 976 numbers, and they'd guarantee, they guarantee winners, and they say stuff like, "We have secret information that the books don't want you to know. You know, only you can." It's one of those things where you call up, and they do scams like, "Let's go back. Let's just stick with the Packers and Vikings playing each other." Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They say, "We'll guarantee you a victory, guarantee you winning or your money back." And they didn't have two phone lines, and one phone line would say the Packers are going to win, the other line would say the Vikings are going to win, and whoever loses, they would just disconnect that phone line, and you would never hear from them again.
Right.
God. But they're showsmen. They're kind of like, I'm fascinated by anyone who can captivate an audience like that. Like, even like to people like Joel Osteen, things like that. People that just can talk to an audience for hours like that, even though, obviously they're con men.
Right. But obviously they're not using their powers for good.
Right. Not at all.
You
know what I mean? As a comedian, I'm intrigued by it. You know what I mean?
Bird's eye view is always, the thing is what it does is watching those people when I was a child, mm-hmm. and having my father point out what they were doing.
Yeah.
Made me more aware of, like, I haven't listened to a politician speak
right
since Clinton. I read the speeches because I can see the lies easier.
When
all that charm is washing over me, it just makes me want to wash. I'm just like, I can't possibly.
Yeah, it's very dirty.
It doesn't feel honest. And the thing is my father, in many, like, his sales pitch, it doesn't, I used to be like, I don't like it, Dad. It feels like you're selling a bill of goods. And he's right. Like, you know that this is the thing I love the most, and you make fun of it. And I'm not cheating anyone or stealing anyone. People need windows and doors and awnings.
They do. And they need to be influenced. They really do. Like, sometimes they need to be assisted, if you will.
Right. It was buying. Like, you're just like, you should buy this. This is something you want. He's like, I'm not selling Kirby vacuum cleaners on a payment plan to people in the inner city, and then taking the vacuum cleaner back. Right. I mean, that was the Kirby vacuum cleaner scam that some people I knew did back in the 80s. And I was like, that's not cool. I mean, just go sell something that people actually want. And you are upselling them a thing, but they will actually be psyched that they got a better phone, or whatever. But so my dad used to actually tell me that he would tout different, I don't know if this was true, grain of salt with all Elliot Cation stories, at the casino. He would actually tout different slot machines.
Really?
And I was like, what were you getting out of that? He was like, well, sometimes they would win and it was a real clock eater. And and I was like, you are a bored man who needs to talk to strangers. And he was like, I am.
And that's amazing. I mean, it is. They're very similar to preachers, until where they're preying on desperate people, which is the sad part. But
that's
if you can see the trick, like, I remember just like, you can watch the trick like happen. Like, they're lying to you, but like, man, there's something that they get to, the trigger's like, well, maybe he does have something. What do I know? What have I been doing this whole time? I don't know what the hell's going on. Maybe he does have something. And then you fall for it. And that's how these people can become president.
Yes. Right. And I did ask my dad, I was like, do you think Donald Trump could win the presidency? And he said, you can't tell. I can't call it. It's impossible to call it, because that guy sometimes makes the sale.
Right.
And you're like, I don't know how he made the sale. Everyone knows he's an idiot. Everyone knows that it's the worst thing in the world to do. And then he makes the sale, and then he's insufferable to be around. And you're like, oh my God, that's exactly what's happened.
That was the most shocking thing of all, like, how transparent it was, that it was a con, but people just didn't care. And that's what kind of shocked me the most. Like, wow, people just don't care. They know it. They know he's full of shit, but they don't care.
But the thing do they? I mean, it's willful ignorance on the part of, like, terrible people. Like, people who are like, well, he's forwarding my crazy racist agenda. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to let that be. I'm not going to hang out with him or his crazy family, but and I know that they're the trash that they are, but they are forwarding what I could possibly, you know, my agenda.
Yeah.
And then there's other people who are so like they weren't raised to see the bird's eye view of.
Right. Yeah, there's definitely a portion that doesn't know that they're being conned. And I understand that. But there's a big portion that does. But in that portion that doesn't, you know, which is definitely sad because I definitely feel like they're victims almost, kind of like the way.
Well, they're victims
because, you know, he knows the buttons and they know like, there's a formula to it, you know, and they're pushing whatever. They're pushing things that they want to hear and they need to hear.
And my dad would always say things like, you know, who are the most gullible people who buy things? Salesmen. Because we're sitting there watching the pitch like it's TV.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden we're like, yeah,
that's
you're
funny.
Right. And I was like, and hence he would buy things.
You know, it's funny that that in gambling, poker dealers or in dealers itself and blackjack dealers, all those dealers, they're all gamblers and they're all the worst gamblers. Just like the salesmen, because they watch and they see everything that goes on and they see people lose their money and all that stuff. And like, I know what not to do. You know, and they think they think they gained the system and then they go out there and they're the worst of them all.
So what do you like to play?
I do play everything. I used to play poker a lot. I still do. But
that
changed a bit because everyone kind of got good at it. And the advantage was not as great.
Was not as clear.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like, now I'm playing too close. Now the odds are actually not entirely in my favor. Yeah.
And it's a lot of work, too. And I used to do a lot. And like, and you have to put, you know, you can't half-ass that and you can't half-ass comedy. That's what I was doing. I was kind of split in between. And then I kind of looked around one day. I'm like, I don't really want to be around these people my entire life. You know, so I kind of veered off of that. But I still go back and do it and I do it less, which is much more enjoyable. But
you do it sort of as I'm going to take a couple hundred dollars or whatever you could afford to lose.
Right.
And then just go and I'm going to have fun. And if I win, then that's super fun.
Yeah, so I'll do table games as well. I'll play craps is a lot of fun. Poker's not fun. See, if I go with friends to a casino, I won't play poker because that's not fun. You're sitting around. You got to be patient. It's a lot of work.
Okay.
And like poker with your friends is fun, but poker with strangers is not, you know. But if I'm playing blackjack or craps or roulette, that's fun, you know, because you can scream and things like that.
So roulette feels incredibly arbitrary, right? Because you're picking colors, right?
Yeah. Well, that's funny you should say that. A lot of these gamblers that we will get to, they play big time roulette, which is kind of weird. They play inside. They don't play outside.
Okay.
Now, if you look at it, it is definitely a ball spinning around a wheel that's also spinning around. So it seems very absolute sure dumb luck.
Yeah.
But there are numbers to a system. I'm going to give you a little. I'm going to give all your listeners a little tip here, Jack.
Little tip, you guys, coming in.
This is your first tip from Uncle Siege here. now, roulette, where people make mistakes when they bet on the inside of roulette, is that the numbers on the board, 1 through 36, I believe, right? 1 through 36 and 00 in America. In Europe, they only have the 10. But anyway, that's how they get the odds when they throw the 00s in there.
Okay.
So when the people play inside, they play numbers. So you might play, my favorite number is 2, my favorite number is 8, blah, blah, blah. Now, the numbers 1 through 10 or whatever through the whole board is not how they are on the wheel. You know, they're completely separate. So
they break them up on the wheel. Okay.
The numbers on the wheel, they're scattered all over the place.
Okay.
But on the board where you bet, they're in order. So you think you're kind of betting, and it makes you in that mindset where you think you're betting 17 and 18 next to each other, but they're not next to each other. They're spread out. So what you want to do is you want to find like a quadrant of numbers that are next to each other and bet those.
Oh, okay.
Most. And so hopefully it'll bounce around that area and you just hit that. You put like, you know, you bet them, you've been on by eights. I think it's like 8 times 4, 32, something like that. Or 9.
Okay.
9 times 4, 36.
Okay.
Hopefully you can find a croupier that's in on it and does the same little motion, you know, every time. And if you see how they track the they track the ball up there.
Yeah.
And they show you the numbers and you're like, oh, well, hit red 10 times in a row. It's got to hit black next time. No, it doesn't. You can go red 50 times in a row. It doesn't matter because the last roll. But if you see a ball coming into the same like quadrant area, then you know the croupier's kind of got the same motion going on. And it's still a ball bouncing around. I'm not saying this is a system by any means.
Right.
But it can help you. It can help you out odds wise. We can come closer to kind of like a belief.
This makes more sense because whenever I look at it, I'm just, I look at it.
It's just random.
And I'm like, Bouncing ball. I like the number 12.
Yep.
I don't even know where the number 12 is on that wheel.
It's a different, exactly. Yeah. It's a difference between memorizing a grocery list and memorizing a script, Jackie. And you, and you being a thespian, know that you want to put a continuity to it, put a story to it. You know.
Yeah, you gotta make choices. You gotta make choices in acting, you guys. I remember that from acting class. Okay.
Can I say, by the way, I was emptying my file, some of my memory in my computer to make room for this cover, and onto a hard drive. And your album is one of the only albums I have on my hard drive that I got. Your last album. And
which one? The Staycation?
Yeah, the Staycation, the last one. Oh. I was even on your Twitch live release party thing.
What?
Just because it was COVID and all that stuff.
Right, and now it's not anywhere. You can get it on Apple and iTunes, but there's been some lawyers. Yeah. Some lawyers, and so it's not on Spotify, it's not on a Sirius, and it's not on Pandora.
I blame Twitch. That was the most embarrassed I got during the pandemic when I woke up and I had Twitch downloaded on my phone. I'm like, what did I do last night? My good, I gotta clean up my life.
I wanted to start a Twitch feed, and then I did not commit. So I do other people's Twitch feeds, and they have hundreds of thousands of followers. Yeah. But the video game I play, like, you know how Twitch is something where you can show your video game?
Yes.
Nobody wants to see my Match 3 Marvel Puzzle Quest that I've been playing for 6 years. you guys, I just got a new character, Chasm. Anyway, they go to the long boxes on these characters.
Get it out. Get the Twitch bits out, I say.
Exactly. So you play, and then Craps is another thing. I learned how to play Craps in Reno. Mm-hmm. Playing the Catch a Rising Star 100 years ago, back in the oldie days. And I was just hanging out and I had like $30. Mm-hmm. And I think I might've been featuring. And so I was like, how do you play craps? And there was an old dude. He was like, nobody's playing. Will you play another stack of chips? And I'll show you what to bet on.
Really? Who worked for the casino?
No, a dude. Dude who wanted to play.
He was at the table. He wanted someone else at the table with him. And he gave you a nice stack.
Yeah, he gave me a nice stack. And he kind of told
A young featuring Jackie batted her eyes and said, sure.
Exactly.
Let's have a night on town.
Yeah, this guy's 67 years old. I'm in my early 30s.
It's a very Demi Moore situation. And,
sure.
Robert Redford at the table.
Right. That might have been the year it came out. God knows. But I ended up trying to figure out, and it moves so fast.
It's a lot. And they can take your money very quickly. You can make money very quickly. But sometimes you're just like, okay, put it down. And they just take it. Like, okay. Tell me what happened, you know?
Well, yeah. And they don't slow down fast. They did have classes at like 5 PM.
You got to keep it simple. It's kind of like, I'll compare it to like a cockpit in an airplane where there's all those buttons, but you don't really need all those buttons. I say the pilots only use like three or four, but a couple of them, you know what I mean?
Right.
You can't let it all overwhelm you. You know what I mean? So a lot of that stuff there is just for emergency. And a lot of those bets and craps are just for emergency. If you're super stuck, which is a time when you're down and you're super stuck, that's when you start betting like crazy, like snake eyes and stuff like that. And all kinds of movies. If you keep it simple, it's a fun game. 7-Eleven, you can know what you're doing.
You're just like, cause there's an outside rim and then there's an inside rim. And then there's a little couple of boxes.
Yeah,
where things are happening, where you're like, well, I want it to be an 11, but only if it's a 5-6.
Yes.
Right.
You can
so,
do it those ways, but it's a very social game because you're betting with other players. You're betting and you're all against the house, obviously. And you can bet for the players. You can actually bet against the players. Only jerks do that. Actually, a fun story. I was in Vegas one time years ago because Kevin Garnett, speaking of Minnesota basketball player, he came right out of high school. And he had like, you know, $200 million contract or something crazy like that. And this is when he was very young. So I was at this craps table. It was only like a $5 table.
Right.
And he came over, Kevin Garnett, in a T-shirt and a diamond necklace that, you know, looked like one of the biggest, that would probably be one of the biggest houses in Minnesota. He comes down. Everyone's going to munch. And I'm rolling the dice. And I'm not lying. He goes out. He slaps some chips down the table. Goes 50,000 against the roller and stared at me. And the whole table just stopped.
Oh,
and
no.
And then he goes, nah, I'm just kidding. $20 for you. And he threw it. And he threw $20. And I my heart dropped. And I'm like, whew. And then, of course, I crapped out. He would have won $50,000.
Oh, my God. That's so funny. That is hilarious. The only story I know from Las Vegas is that Greg Giraldo told me that when he got his first deal,
Yeah.
He spent 3 days in Las Vegas and spent all of his deal money on booze and lost it all. 75 grand, something like that. And when he came to, his wife had called him like 30 times. And at the end of it, she said, "I'm taking the kids. You're never going to see him again unless you call me back." And so another tragic end,
yeah,
for a guy who gambled and drank. What did happen to Jimmy the Greek, by the way? Jimmy the Greek die?
He died alone and penniless. And,
oh, okay.
Sick. He has kids though and all that, but you know.
Okay.
I mean, you know, kind of that's the gambler mentality.
You think of yourself.
You finished how you came into the world. You know, you want to be the same and just leave it all out there. You can't take it with you, as the old catchphrase used to be.
Yeah, you can't take it with you. I don't know if you wanted to leave it on a paisley patterned carpet in Las Vegas.
Yeah, I think his son probably was like, "Well, I could have took it. You don't take it with you, but I could have grabbed it. You know, maybe
you don't
help my family out."
Right. You could have bought everybody a house. So the celebrity gamblers you wanted to talk about were Kenny Rogers, Charles Barkley, and Norm MacDonald.
Yeah, I will say that Norm MacDonald, speaking of which, just because that story ties in right there with Greg Trull, and he, of course, is a known gambler. And he went bankrupt a couple times through gambling.
Okay.
And one time he answered the question.
Does that work?
What's that? Going broke?
You don't have to pay. You don't have to pay anybody your gambling debts if you go bankrupt.
Well, no. There's debts, and then he just lost his money. He had money, you know, from a show and all that.
Okay.
And then he was asked one time during an interview, like, "You're a smart man, Norm. You know, how could you lose all your money like that through gambling?" And he's like, and his answer is pretty clear of the gambling mentality. He's like, "Well, when you have $500,000 in your bank account, you know, and you lose $450,000. The last thing you want to do is look at that last $50,000 because it just reminds you of how much money you used to have. So I want to get rid of it." And they're trying to get rid of that point. And once you go broke, it's very liberating. And then you clap your hands, you walk outside, like, it's finally over with.
Wow.
And he did that a couple of times.
Wow. Norm.
I know.
Okay. All right.
He used to have a thing in his rider where, you know, or his riders, managers would tell him anytime he worked Vegas, don't give him any cash because he'll gamble it.
Right.
And when he recently passed, was it April? Was it anything like that? I was out in, doing Wise Guys, which is a new club in Vegas in the Arts District. In the Arts District. Yeah. New Wise Guys.
Yeah. That's the best because it's off the strip.
Absolutely. And they're locals. There's people who aren't just there trying to, kill an hour.
Yep.
Through comps. So that was great. So we asked for money for that, like $1,000, but they no one has cash like that anymore. But anyway, they gave us $500. So in honor of Norm, and then we ran it up. We played craps actually downtown at the El Cortez. That's the only one we could find like a cheaper table.
You just want to have fun. I don't want to, that's why I like Reno better than Vegas. I never think I'm going to meet Matt Damon.
Right.
Right.
Exactly. So we were looking for fun. We ran it up. We actually got up, we tripled it up to like 2000, went back recently, made like another sports bet that won on the Colorado Avalanche to win the Stanley Cup, which they did. And then we went back. So this hat I'm wearing is a contest, Circa Casino, which is downtown. Survivor contest. $1,000 to enter this contest, which I use my Norm money for.
Okay.
It's for all football season long. You pick one team to win. No point spread whatsoever. Just one win, but you can't use the same team twice. Seems like an easy contest. And they put in like $6 million. So it's a big contest. And long story short.
You want a hat?
I got a hat. I paid $1,000 for this hat. My team So he's looking at $1,000 ball.
Oh, my God. What is your football team of choice?
I was a childhood fan of the Philadelphia Eagles, so there's no stopping them now.
Oh, yeah. I know more about the Packers than I have ever cared.
Yes.
They're
and of course, I live in Chicago. I have a huge
the Bears.
Bears and Packer fans, of course, were always a part of our lives.
A lot of recrimination. I always wish that everybody would win, and statistically impossible, it turns out.
Yeah, but that's very Midwest of you.
So Kenny Rogers, the gambler.
Yes, Kenny Rogers, the gambler. What a fun career that is, too, when you have that song, such a hit song. So now you kind of I think he was kind of painting himself in a corner where he had to be a gambler. Like, he even knows if he wrote that song, you know, but like, all right, I guess I'm going to do a mini series about it now, you know, and
right.
Like, he had like 10 albums, whatever, all based around the gambler. But mm-hmm. I do have a Kenny Rogers story, which
Let's
I do
it.
Love the gambler. So my old manager was friends with Kenny Rogers' son. And I think he's manage Kenny Rogers, whatever, doesn't matter. Point is, he's in the casino. This is how the story's being told through my manager. They're in Caesars in Las Vegas with Kenny Rogers, his son, a couple other people. And Kenny Rogers is playing blackjack, and it's he's got a lot of money in front of it, in front of him, and a crowd's gathering around because it's Kenny Rogers, you know.
Sure.
And he's playing, and people are chanting his name, Kenny, you know, like they're loving him. He's beloved everywhere he goes. It's Kenny Rogers, he's the gambler. And so eventually he's down a little bit, Next thing you know, he's got his stacks, and he puts it all in for one big hand. And I think like he split it, whatever. It was like split eighths something. And he had like, it was something like 40,000 each on the hand. So it was all in on this big last big hand. And now the whole crowd, I mean, there's a huge crowd. I'm like, Kenny, you know. And then dealer hits out, five card, hits 21. Kenny busts. He loses it all.
Right.
So goes, everyone's going. And Kenny just puts his hand up. Folks, sometimes you just got to know when to walk away. And everyone's like, yeah, he lives the song, man. He does it, you know, like, and so he's walking to the elevator, him, my manager, and a couple of his son, you know, and everyone's like, Kenny. And then like he's waving as the elevator door shuts. Everyone's like, Kenny. As soon as he does it, Kenny Rogers flips out, goes, motherfucker, and starts ripping apart the elevator because he's angry. He just lost $80,000.
Yeah, he just lost 80 grand.
Yeah, the chicken places weren't doing great at the time. He's taking the fire hydrant off and ripping it. So you imagine being security and watching him? Like, is that Kenny Rogers tearing up our elevator right now?
Did he just hit Beyonce's sister? What just happened?
But he kept the cool. You gotta know when to walk away. Like, he lives the song, man.
He lives the song, except he didn't. Lived the song.
He didn't. He did not know when to fold them.
But what he did not do, he did not reach for his wallet, which we all appreciate, to grab another 80 grand. So
yes, that's right. You don't chase. That's
right.
Sure.
Right. That's power. I kind of want to, because we're
up against
like,
it.
Yeah, we have like 15 minutes left.
Really? You were right. Yeah. This does fly by.
It really does. So.
Sure, we'll skip ahead.
Powerful people who gambled away a fortune or lost it all.
Yes.
Who do you love?
I believe I put down two names on there.
Leonard
Toast used to own the Philadelphia Eagles in the late 70s and early 80s. He is he's a great personality. I've always wanted to write a script about his life, but he owned the Philadelphia Eagles, NFL football team.
Yep.
Lived the high life, gambled away pretty much his entire fortune. He did a lot of good things. He started, I should say, very positive thing about him. Everyone loved him. He started the Ronald McDonald House, actually, which is still.
Oh, did he? Did he own McDonald's?
No.
McDonald's guy?
He partnered with McDonald's for the Ronald McDonald House, which houses, families of cancer patients or kids who have cancer like that.
Yeah. He puts them up and
Amazing charity. So he, but then he lost all his fortune in Atlantic City, basically. And, you know, like he would go down after every games and they would.
Atlantic City.
Right.
It's so gross.
It's so disgusting.
They're doing amazing work with cold cuts, though. Have you ever had a sandwich there?
Oh, of course. The White House Grill had the best hoagies there.
They have the best hoagies. And but the crazy thing is I went every day to it. Mm-hmm. And then one day I couldn't make it. And I just wanted one of those sandwiches anyway. And so I bought one on the boardwalk.
Yeah.
And it was still amazing. I don't know. If it's
they never change and they never will.
I don't know what they're doing with the water, with the bread,
with the
slicing of the meats. It's the only good thing about Atlantic City, though. The boardwalk was very pretty.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
100 years ago, I mentioned it was great when horses were jumping off high dives and stuff in the cups of water and stuff. And they were,
William McKinley would go there.
Right.
Babies were
eating saltwater taffy underneath the hermit crab. I don't know. But the point is.
That's right. You're from Jersey.
Yeah.
So much Atlantic City, I'm sure, in your past.
I think Drew Carey had that joke about the difference between Vegas and Atlantic City is being conned buying conned by a beautiful call girl and robbed by a crackhead or something. But it's the same results.
Sure.
Result. He probably had a better language than I just put it. But
no problem.
Point is.
Leonard Toe.
So yeah, and then he wound up suing the casino. A lot of these whales who lose a ton of money, they wound up suing the casino. Kind of a desperate move. Like, he took advantage of me. You knew what I was going to do. Like, I was going to, you keep giving me drinks. I'm going to gamble. And that's what's going to happen. And then they never win, but it's always a fun shot. Why not?
Right. It's like a Hail Mary of just like, well, maybe this will work. Maybe this will irritate them.
Yeah.
And so, okay. So he tried that and he ended up.
They're not going to do anything. So he wound up having to sell this football team for like pennies on a dollar to this real jerk, Norman Brayman. And one last like kick in the story, like he was like eating at a restaurant, I believe. And Norman Brayman, who's taking advantage of him, was waiting for a table and was raining outside. And he had like and Leonard Toe just kept tipping the host $100 to keep him waiting outside in the rain for a half an hour. He's like, I can't do it anymore. He's like, that's all right. You did plenty. And then that was like his last thing.
Oh, my God. That sounds like something my brother Russ would do.
And I remember in one of his last interviews, they asked him, if I was going to give you $100 million right now, what would you do? And he's like, oh, I'd charter a boat back to the French Riviera. You know, like, he'd go right back to gambling. Of course, what am I going to do? I'm going to blow it. That's what that's what we're wired to do.
Right. My dad, during COVID, I had my father likes to paint. It is his hobby. He likes to paint in acrylics. He's got a lot of really fun, very nice paintings. He can do all kinds of buildings because he was a print, you know, a siding salesman for a thousand years. So he could constantly draw buildings, houses and stuff, but he also likes to draw like nature and birds and different, you know. And so a guy asked if my dad would draw Batman for him. He was like, I'd give him $100 if he could draw Batman. I was like, my father loves $100. $100 plus shipping. My father will draw you Batman. So he drew Batman. And then he sent the Batman to me. And then I sent it in the mail to the guy and it got lost. So my dad had to draw Batman twice.
Bought two Batmans.
And he drew two Batmans. And then, but so he did it like, I think like a dozen paintings over COVID just to keep him in the house. And I would send him more. I would Amazon him like canvases and acrylics. And Maria Bamford had him draw her parents.
I was just going to say, I kind of want to, wouldn't mind a draw. I'm sure.
$100 plus shipping.
Any man who touts slot machines and has a vacuum cleaner scam, he can draw Batman. That man can draw Batman.
One of my favorite ones that somebody requested was they wanted a Hogwarts castle. And my dad was like, the hell is Hogwarts? And I said, just draw a castle, Dad. And so he did this castle with like a Pegasus and a unicorn, which inspired someone to say, can I just get a unicorn? And then my father, for some reason, has a depth perception problem and has never been able to just draw a unicorn with the horn out. Mm. And so it's a fucked up unicorn. I was the only one where I was like, you're not going to want this. It is art. I get it. But and I always tell people, I'm like, you kind of get what you get. The unicorn one, I was willing to spot somebody, but that was it. And but for the most part, because somebody wanted a Godzilla, and I was like, my dad.
Who are all these people? I love this clientele.
It was just on Instagram. It was Instagram. Oh, okay. Yeah. And I just posted some of his pictures, and I was like, does anyone want a painting?
Yes.
And so if you would, at Rangers also, a small ad, my father would also still like $100. though I did for a short amount of time charge $200, but demand is down, you guys. So we're back down to $100.
I'm gonna buy the dip, get in low on that number. I'm definitely gonna request.
So who's Maureen? This is the first woman.
Yeah, first woman. There's a couple of women. She's one that makes my list. She was the mayor of San Diego, Maureen O'Connor, I believe, right? Is that her name? She was the mayor of San Diego in the 80s. She lost about 15 million. This is why she's a great politician, though. She lost about 15 million all in video poker, which is
lonely.
Pretty video insane. Poker. Yeah, video poker. And I kind of get that, though, because they definitely hit the senses of addiction and like where it's just machines and numbers and the colors and lights. You can see where you just lose track of humanity and you're just punching machine. But the thing about her is she gambled, like put money into play over $1 billion. Lifetime of actually gambling.
What?
So for her to only lose 15 million,
she actually won.
I'm going to say she's pretty good at it, but that's why she's a politician. She's great at hedging risk and reward. You know, she knows how to, like, you know, not risk much, but while
still getting to play,
putting a lot of play. And she can move money around as a politician. I mean, she was the mayor of San Diego. Wow. Owing 15 million from video poker.
Wow. And where the hell did she? Are any of these people still alive?
Yeah, a lot of them are alive, which is
that's amazing.
Pretty amazing. So, not Norm, of course, or Kenny.
Right, right. So legends who lost it all.
Legends who lost all. These are the big kind gamblers.
The Earl of Sandwich.
The Earl of Sandwich. Well, he's from Nathan. He claims he invented the sandwich.
But the Earl of Sandwich invented the sandwich, didn't he?
But he claims he is the Earl of Sandwich. But there's a debate over that. But he's from playing poker, because he said, bring me meat, one, two bread, so he could stay at the table and play for days on end. So
this is like the old timey, like 1700.
Yes, yes.
Earl of Sandwich.
Right, he is the Earl of Sandwich. But he said he invents it through poker.
Okay.
I like a lot of the stories of inventing of foods like that, where everything's just jammed into one thing. It's just so you could keep on going for sessions, either driving trucks or gambling or whatever. It's just I just got to go. Life is just the way it is. I don't have time. I don't have time to talk or separate items.
No
plate or utensils. Just shove it thing into my face so I won't pass out this week.
Exactly. So I don't die of malnutrition at the table. Mm-hmm. What about Archie Karras?
Ooh, yes. Archie Karras, also Greek, of course.
Oh, yeah. That's a Greek name, but it's like one of the short ones. Yeah.
He has an amazing story. He went on one of the sickest runs ever, sick as in good, $40 million in 3 weeks from $10,000. He borrowed $10,000 from somebody. Turned that into 30 real quick, paid the guy back, and he ran that up to basically $40 million.
Wow.
In 3 weeks. Poker, some games, and then he started getting away from it. Like, he would just put money on the table. He wouldn't even, like, ask challenge, but he would just put money on his table, sit by himself, and wait for people to come up and play him. And he would play some of the best people, like Stu Unger, and win.
Right.
But then he was, like any sicko that can run that up to $40 million, he lost it all.
Like it just as quickly, or...?
Just as quickly, and like he is almost proud, because he went right to games where he had no chance, like you said, like roulette and whatever, and not
what did he do for a living?
Well, besides win and lose $40 billion, none of these people that we talk about do anything for a living, but they, you know, they live for the action. I mean, people have time to actually do a 9-to-5 and like have contribute to society. Aren't collecting all of Binion's $5,000 denomination chips, which he did one time.
Knew a guy. Okay, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, here's this quote real quick of how he, because someone asked, how did you possibly lose $40 million?
Yeah.
And he's like, you got to understand something. This is a lot of gamblers. Money means nothing to me. I don't value it. I've had all the material things I could ever want, everything. Things that I want, money can't buy. Health, freedom, love, happiness, which I'm sure you don't care. I don't care about money, so I have no fear. So I don't care if I lose it. I enjoy losing it. That's the thing. A lot of people do enjoy losing it. Which is weird, because when they win, they're not that happy. When they lose, they're like, that just feels right, you know.
Well, to some extent, it feels like something.
Yes,
like they're not feeling anything, and when they lose, they at least have some sort of weird emotion.
The money is just a way to keep score, as they say. The juice is the action is the juice for them.
Okay,
tell your story that was coming up. Sorry,
it was this guy that I mean, I knew a couple of guys who were brothers, and in the early the late 90s, early 2000s, they did day trading, mm-hmm. which, as far as I can tell, is gambling.
Yes.
You know, I mean, and they would work these day jobs like 60, 80 hour weeks to get a nut, right? Mm-hmm, to get a little like 10 grand. And then they would day trade, and then they would make, you know, 60 or 100 grand.
Right.
And then they'd get off the day trading, they'd cash out and live on it until they ran out of money. And then they would get a shit job painting houses or shoveling sand or whatever, make 10 grand and do it again.
Yeah, man, I can see that.
And it felt like I mean, living your life, like they did get to sit around a bunch and play video games and, you know, go stare at the ocean. But it did not.
Yeah, it's just it's a thing about not following orders and that kind of thing. I mean, we obviously live that through comedy and stuff like that, where you just, you know, it's a different path where they just can't live, you know, a normal life.
Right. It's just, yeah.
You know, it's funny to go back real quick to that Billy Walters guy, the guy who started as nine, who's the all-time best sports gambler of all time, money-wise. He's actually in jail right now for not from sports gambling, because he retired on that and went into trading, like you're saying, and he did like some insider trading. He did it for a couple of years. I think that's kind of funny. Like, when, like someone who's a gambler his entire life tries to go legit, they don't know how to do it.
Right.
So they do it, and then, you know,
he ends up cheating.
Yeah, and he didn't need the money, but he wants an advantage. You know what I mean? He wanted that gambling advantage that he had in gambling.
Yeah.
So he does the cheating, and he gets caught, and now he's doing like 4 years or something like that.
That is nuts. Yes. By the way, I am talking with CJ Sullivan, CJSullivanComedy.com. At CJ Sullivan was taken. That'll be in the notes on Instagram. You have a podcast called The Blackout Diaries on Starburn.
Mm-hmm.
It's available wherever you listen to podcasts. And you have a new comedy album called What Am I Complaining About?
Yes.
Yeah. So
I also want to add real quick. I just started doing a Fortis thing where I went to Vegas for the $1,000 hat that I bought.
Yep.
I'm also doing a podcast called My Bottom Line Bombs, where I kind of make fun of touts who like say, this is a guaranteed bomb to hit. That's a podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. So that's every Friday.
Oh, there you go.
I just, that's only going to go for this NFL season. It's kind of a passion project.
Okay. So it's a series. It's just a,
it is. It'll be one before every Friday before the NFL games.
Oh, that's awesome.
I pick 5 games a week, but I tell it through, like I look for the bit, like a joke within the game matchup, and hopefully like a pick will come out of I look for the joke first, then the pick comes. Doesn't work out great for me because that's not the best way to do it, but I have fun with it. I always look for the bit first, you know.
Right. Okay, so take that as a grain of salt when you listen to that podcast. Absolutely. What's the name of it again?
Bottom Line Bombs.
Bottom Line Bombs.
On the Sports Gambling Podcast Network.
Right on. And now we only have a couple of minutes left.
Okay.
What about Stu Unger, Gin Rummy legend?
Gin Rummy legend. He had a tragic. He was like the Stevie Ray Vaughan, if you will, of gamblers. He was like this legend. He died from just absolute drug abuse and things like that, which happens. But he was known as like the most talented poker player, just card player of all time. He was a Gin Rummy legend, like came up in New York like as a kid. He was called Stu the Kid.
Okay.
There's a horrible, horrible bio movie about him with Michael Imperioli plays Stu Unger, The Sopranos, Michael Imperioli. Christopher in The Sopranos plays.
Oh, right.
It was a Starz original movie before Starz was even Starz. And what's it called? The Stu Unger story.
I just looked that up.
It's just, there's an actual title for it, but the Stu Unger story under the Quillen.
Okay.
But he was a legend. He was like, he won back-to-back World Series. One time, like, they found him on the streets because he was so in drug abuse, and some guy propped him up, gave him money to enter the World Series, and he wound up winning it outside. Like, he was just like,
wow.
He's just one of those guys.
Right. Just imagine if he had just, you know, not been that guy. Had sort of gotten his shit together.
Yeah, and then it comes over like, but that's what he needed to be him. No, actually, he didn't. That's not true at all.
I'm going to die in my bed of old age. That's what's going to happen.
Right.
It's going to be nice. So what about the mad genius that is Mike Caro?
Mike Caro is an interesting one because he was the first one. He is the birth of Tells, basically. He wrote the quintessential book of the Book of Tells, it's called, where he doesn't really teach poker as far. I mean, obviously he can play poker, but he was the first one who could play poker without looking at the cards. And he studied human nature and like how to read a person. And everything people know from reading people comes from his book, Mike Caro's Book of Tells.
It basically
comes down to like strength equals weakness and weakness equals strength. So if you say, oh, I got a good hand, they don't have a good hand. And then there's just variations of that.
Okay.
And it's funny because actors got into poker, obviously, when poker got big, and they're the worst poker players because they overact. You would think, oh, you need to be a good actor, but you don't want to be an actor. You would be like, whoa, look at this one right here. So like, obviously, you know, like, okay, Tobey Maguire, we get it. You have a bad hand.
Right. And then they all wanted to do movies where they played that they were really good at it.
Yep. I know. What a weird thing that was. That was a brother thing.
So how about Texas Dolly?
Texas Dolly, Doyle Brunson. He's the legend. Him and Amarillo Slim. Yep. Amarillo Slim. Now, you hear the word Amarillo Slim, you'd think, well, he's from the 1800s, right? Now,
right?
He died like 5 years ago. It's amazing. It's amazing. And he was all Amarillo Slim. The hat, both of them like just Texas poker players. And they have amazing like stories like that. And then they came to Vegas and started the World Series of Poker basically by playing back when they would just like play heads up for like weeks on end. And that's what it became. And like they just couldn't believe gambling was legitimate in Las Vegas, you know.
Right.
So they're the godfathers of the poker scene before the TV era. It was Doyle Brunson, Amarillo Slim, and a bunch of guys like that.
But, okay.
But just you need, I think in a good poker, you need a name like Texas Dolly, Amarillo Slim, anytime there's a city in there. I mean, just those names are just, they don't have these guys anymore.
You right, know?
And
right.
And that's what I do miss about playing poker. When I used to play poker all the time, it's like you do meet some amazing characters that you just can't believe where they come from and their stories and their, you
know, right. Right. It's such a crazy, like all of those personalities. Like I talk about my dad, I was like, man, those skid balls that you hung out with, man. Mm-hmm. And he's like, they were fascinating people.
Yeah.
And they were, you know, and I was like, so who are you hanging out now? He's like, now I got to hang out with 30-year-old dirtbags. And I was like, it seems like a lot of work, Dad. And, but so there's a book that I read that I gave my dad that because it was amazing.
Okay.
And Meyer Lansky. It's the story of Meyer Lansky, one of the founders of Las Vegas,
okay.
Who tried to turn Havana into Las Vegas. And it's called Havana Nocturne. Nocturne, less in nighttime. And it's about Meyer Lansky and the mob guys, right? The Lucky Luciano. And
the whole Godfather 2 was about that when I went down to Cuba, right?
Right. And this is literally just it's an easy read, which I love, you know, in a nonfiction kind of memoir-y thing.
Sure.
And but if people want to know about more like books to read and stuff, I think that they might like the Two for the Money or the Stu Unger story.
Yeah, for sure. Like all
campy, campy kind of tales of weird gambling,
right? And there's a lot of movies, obviously, but they never really get it right. There's some good gambling movies that are good movies, but they never really get gambling itself right, which is kind of always fun. It's always funny to me, like they would never, you'd think you would have some consultant on there, you know, on set that would say,
I've never thought that they've gotten any stand-up right. So
yeah, no, exactly the same thing, like punchline or where are these locker rooms coming from?
What about the polka dot one where she wore polka dots and that was her hook? And you're like, all right, I think it was also, all right, never mind.
Well, it was the 80s, I guess. People got sitcoms for having a voice.
now there's Hacks and there's Miss Maisel and there's a thousand other things. And you're like, the one that was set at the store that was
dying up here or something.
Yeah, dying up here. And it's fine. But there is some sort of intangible that. There's a certain kind of, like, they think that they're getting it when they add like a layer of sadness.
Right.
Well, and you're like, that's not it.
No, I know. They're in love with that narrative of the, you know, the depressed comic or whatever, and the addicted comic and things like that.
And the
dark dual life of making people.
I think like the Coen brothers mob movie with the one.
Miller's Crossing
mm-hmm. was the one that felt like it was the most real of how terrifying it would be to be in the mob and how it was such a sort of a dead end. And you're like, well, I guess I'm going to party as hard as I can because I'm going to be left in the woods.
Yeah.
And with a bag of porn, I assume. And so
I can only hope.
Right. Please. Except for you'll be dead. You won't be able to read those Playboys. CJ, so this has been a delight.
This is great, Jackie. Thank you for having me.
I appreciate it.
I'm amazing. I can't wait to watch the episode with Sean, the other Blackout Diaries partner. How did he pronounce your name, by the way? I'm just curious.
It's Cation, like staycation.
I know how you pronounce it. How did Sean pronounce it?
He didn't pronounce it at all.
He didn't?
No, at no time did he say my last name.
That's funny.
He just said Jackie.
Because he usually, that's what I was asking. How do you pronounce your first name? Because that's how bad he is at pronouncing name.
It's here it is, you guys. It's the ribbing that goes along with having a partner in podcasting.
Right? Yeah, especially podcast. When they're not on. That's part of it. That's why you brought up. That's it. You brought up Lori.
I brought up Lori. The Blackout Diaries, the Jackie and Lori show.
Yes.
What am I complaining about? And then the name of what's Sean's book called?
Sean's book is Places Can't Return To.
That's it.
I wrote the foreword on that one, by the way, the forewarning word in that.
So,
which I argue is actually tougher than writing the whole book because you only have a little opportunity to get it good. Yeah, you can waste chapters, who cares?
Keep it tight. Keep it tight.
You gotta keep it tight.
All right, we gotta go. But Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?